This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Perhaps you've tuned in WFAE on Friday nights at 9 and heard something unusual. People telling stories. They sound unscripted because they are. Often the people telling the stories don't sound professional because, well, they aren't. They're humans, which make them interesting. Many times the stories they tell are funny, even though the person talking isn't a comedian. Other times they're fairly serious. Either way, if you give these stories just a few seconds, you're usually hooked. For instance, here's a man named Ed Gavigan telling a story about receiving a call from an assistant district attorney.
He was calling about a case where five guys were in custody for attempted murder. And they were gang members from a gang called the Latin Kings. And they had come in from Brooklyn on the night before Thanksgiving. And their mission was to kill somebody that night as part of an initiation. They were hoping to move up in the management ranks of the gang, kind of like Outward Bound for urban thugs. And you never think that you're going to be the guy whose whole life changes forever because you choose to walk down one side of the street instead of the other side. But as I turned off of Bleecker Street to walk down the block that night, I picked the right-hand side of the street and I walked into their ambush. And about 15 minutes later, I was being wheeled into the emergency trauma room at St. Vincent's with multiple stab wounds.
I bet you want to hear more, don't you? Well, that's the idea behind the show called The Moth. It's a throwback to a time before electronic media, before electronic anything, because telling stories to one another is as old as time. Well, The Moth is here in Charlotte for a sold-out event tonight at Spirit Square's McGlone Theater, but don't despair because we have the creators of The Moth with us for the hour, or several people involved in making this happen week after week. Dan Kennedy is host of The Moth Podcast and a regular host of The Moth Story Slam series, who will be telling a story at the show tonight, the live show tonight, and also being kind of the master of ceremonies of the show, I understand. Is that not true?
No, we actually, okay. Tonight we've got Ophira Eisenberg, who's a good friend of ours and really funny, and she's going to host tonight, which is always a treat.
Okay. Yeah. Dan Kennedy's here. Also with us in our Spirit Square studio is senior producer and story coach Maggie Sino, isn't it?
Sino, yeah.
Maggie Sino, also a performer and a playwright. Welcome to you.
Hi, yes, very happy to be here.
Delighted to have you here. I thought you were going to be on the phone from New York, but you're here in person. That's terrific. And John Lincoln is a Charlotte resident and storyteller for The Moth. Tonight's show will be his third performance, if that's the right word. Are these performances? Is that what you call them?
Of sorts.
Sure.
This will be a new story for me. The prior two performances were another story.
Yeah. So, yeah. Okay.
Why not?
Let me begin with a question. Every time I hear this show on the air, I always think, why is it called The Moth?
It's called The Moth because our founder, George Dawes Green, actually lived in Georgia and used to hang out on his friend Wanda Bullard's porch with just a whole bunch of friends and characters from all around the small town that they lived in. And they would come at night and drink bourbon and tell stories on the porch, and they would laugh and say, oh, look at the moths around the porch light. We're like the moths. We're like the moths. So, The Moth.
Gathering for the light of the storytelling.
Exactly, yeah.
This thing has become a phenomenon. I mean, it's not just the radio show. It's so much more than the radio show. Talk about all of the entities that are branded as The Moth.
Well, The Moth has six different programs. You know, and again, we've been fortunate in just how much interest and how much enthusiasm there are around these programs. What's going to be happening here tonight is our main stage program, which is a curated event with five storytellers, each telling a 10-minute story. And we're always looking for storytellers. We're always looking for five storytellers who are all very different from each other, who just have different points of view, different experiences, all that. We also have our Story Slam series, which is in more than a dozen cities now across the country. That's an open mic night. 5-minute stories. Dan hosts Story Slam and can certainly speak to this. But names out of a hat, random. We've never seen these people before. They get up and they just open up to us.
So by curated event, you mean that you have You as a producer and other people involved have worked with the storytellers?
Yes, they've been selected in advance. You know, we've talked to them about the story that they're going to tell. And yeah, we definitely participate and work with our storytellers just to make sure that they have the opportunity to be as truthful and as elegant as their story deserves.
And the Story Slam series is kind of like karaoke night or open mic night of the comedy.
Yeah, it's always kind of to me it always feels a little bit like the punk rock version of the Moth main stage, you know. We started it, I guess it was 2003 when we did the first one at the New Eureka on the Lower East Side in New York. And to me it seemed like a crazy idea because, you know, we had these main stage shows only up to that point. And I thought, when Jennifer Hickson, the producer of the Story Slam series, told me what she was thinking of doing, I thought, that's sort of crazy. I mean, there's so much, you know, at stake with telling a story for that amount of time and stuff. But we did the first night, and it was just incredible. So to me, it always feels very lo-fi and fun and sort of dangerous, like it could really fly or it could really just fly right into the ground.
And on those events, these Story Slam events, where people have not been worked with and they get up, pull a name out of a hat, you're on. They have, what, 10 minutes, she said? 10 minutes to do their story? 12 minutes? Something like that.
They have 5 minutes on the slam and then okay. 10 minutes on the main stage.
Well, people who are not in broadcasting are not ruled by the clock. They have no concept of how long 5 minutes is, so do a lot of it.
That's putting it politely and mildly. And yeah, and none of us do. As a matter of fact, we were like running through a couple things yesterday. I've been doing this for 13 years, and I thought, oh, I'll just run through this story that I'm going to do at the show tonight. Yeah. And Maggie's looking at me like, yeah, do you remember how we have like a 10-minute time limit on this? It's 20 minutes later, and apparently you're really taken with yourself. We were wondering if you're going to wrap it up soon. We have, you know, a musical cue at the shows, and we do that at the slam and as well at the main stage as the main stage. So if you're getting close to the five-minute mark, you'll hear a little note. And as I always like to say on stage, and you'll do nothing because we're all creative. So we keep going. And then you hear a second note. And folks get the clue after that.
Yeah.
With a trap door.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there is a trap door in that theater, so be careful. You describe yourselves at the Moth as a not-for-profit organization dedicated to the art and craft of storytelling. I'm just curious how this went from the porch in Georgia to its first event, its first night out at the theater, so to speak.
Well, it was, you know, it was a very sort of long and gradual process from the porch in Georgia to where we are right now. And, I mean, it started in New York City because George came to New York City and was spending all these times at parties where everybody was trying to be so charming and then not paying attention to what anyone was saying because they were looking over the shoulder for somebody else to talk to. So he thought, well, wouldn't it be awesome if there was just a forum where people could like just hang out and like tell their story and be heard? And it started as an informal gathering in his living room, and then it moved out from there to more public venues. And then as the 15 years have passed, it's diversified, and now we're very lucky to be able to do it nationwide and even internationally sometimes.
And really, the sort of, I think the tipping point on it getting bigger from George's living room to clubs is if you give people in New York City 10 minutes to speak uninterrupted, it's a phenomena. And folks couldn't get enough of it. And then you couple that with the fact that No matter how successful you are, George had a couple of really big books and movies, but no matter how successful you are in New York City, your living room is very small. So those two things meet, those two axes cross, and it really explodes. You need a bigger room and people want to talk.
You're a New York writer. You've written books. You've written for various publications, which we'll talk about later. But the Moth stories, as I am told, are unscripted, and the people telling the stories don't have any notes in their hand. Does it help to be a writer, someone who is accustomed to working out the details of a story and editing it down and communicating it in some kind of a cogent, efficient way? Or do you have the same kind of a problem that a non-writer would have in getting your story down to 10 minutes, 12 minutes, whatever it is?
Well, in general, let's be clear that writers have more problems than anybody in life in general.
Which is why you write.
Yes.
Therapy.
So having said that as a disclaimer, I find that you know, it certainly helps with rhythm and stuff like that, I would like to think. But, you know, like in Run Through yesterday, I feel like as a writer, you're trained to investigate every angle of a sentence, mm-hmm. which is great on the page when you've got all night to work on a draft or all month or 6 months. And it's not really great when you've got 10 minutes. My tendency will be, oh, there's this scene coming up. I wonder if it's better if I come at it from this angle or that angle. And you really, I find I have to police myself to go, well, this isn't, you know, this isn't uninterrupted time in your apartment figuring out which way you want to go at this. Right. This is like pick away and go.
And that's where people like Maggie come in, because I'm told that you are, well, I said you're a coach, you're a story coach.
Indeed.
You work with these people. Are you like an yes. editor would be at a magazine or a newspaper or a publisher?
A little bit. I mean, because people come into us, and one of the great things about what we do is people come in with just all different kinds of people with all different levels of experience, being on stage, working out stories, you know, controlling narrative. And what I do is just basically help everybody where they're at to make what they want to say as strong and interesting as possible.
So you're actually John, let me bring you into the conversation, because obviously you've worked with Maggie or somebody at the
yes.
Moth in your previous appearances on the program and on the stage with them. When you did it the first time, how much of the story that you came in with ended up being told?
Well, to give you an idea, it was the first run through was 23 minutes, so less than half. And my favorite line is at the end, Sarah Austin Jeunesse was the director of the first show, and then Maggie the last two. Her favorite line is, love, love, love it. Just a couple comments, and then there are three pages of comments. And this continues. We do this on the phone, which is very disconcerting when you're sitting in an office in Charlotte talking to someone on a phone.
And
in
when
New
you're
York.
Doing this, you're actually – you're not sending them a script. You are actually telling them the story verbally,
exactly.
correct? So that makes – that seems to be, as the coach –
yes.
to be very difficult, because there's nothing to refer to. It's coming right. It's coming at you as it's happening, and then it's gone. How do you remember what you're going to say?
Well, I mean, I definitely take a lot of notes. But then again, this is how the audience experiences
right.
it. And the rules of what's on the page is actually quite different from the rules of what works out loud. And one thing that I always find myself saying to people a lot is be more obvious. Because especially people who come from a writing background tend to be sort of like, oh, I've just like put this in this very clever way, and like they'll catch it. But like if you're in the audience, you're thinking like, oh God, did I call the babysitter? Like, you know,
exactly.
I hope, did I leave them enough Cheerios?
And the
second you like, you know, and the second you think that, this like one very small elegant sentence is lost. So part of the art form of it is just, you know, making sure that what you say like very clearly and sometimes in primary colors. So that's a big part of my job, is always reminding people of that.
How much of it is words? How much of it is pacing? How much of it is silence? How much of it is tone of voice? How much of it is acting?
Well, there's not really acting. It's not acting, because it's very much, you know, everybody's coming in with this experience, you know, with an experience that's actually happened to them. Mm-hmm. But one thing we do talk about a lot is sometimes when you're working, you know, working through how you want to tell the story and kind of refining the best way to present it, sometimes it definitely happens that people sort of forget that things actually happened to them. So there's always a little bit of a moment where you have to say, like, this is, we had a conversation about this last night where it's like, oh, this is actually like, you know, the first time you told it to me, you were really upset about this. And when you get up there and talk about it this time, you just need to tap into what that is. This isn't a string of words. This is an actual experience.
We have to take a break. When I come back, I want to talk about how you keep it fresh after you've told it 1,000 times and edited it down to 12 minutes. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Billy Graham Library, presenting Rooted in Prayer, Biblical Truths for Everyday Living. The exhibit presents a closer look at teachings and examples of prayer now through June 30th. Details available at billygrahamlibrary.org. And Winston-Salem, offering visitors a seasonal sampler of Farm to Fork Eatery's rich regional art, culture, history, and local Yadkin Valley wine. Information to plan a visit at yoursouthernwakeupcall.com. Speaking of food, there's been a lot of talk in recent years about the importance of local foods to both the economy and to your health and nutrition. But local actually begins in your home garden, and you can have access to the most nutritious vegetables possible, control how they were grown, and more importantly, you'll save an enormous amount of money. And you can do all this with a minimum amount of effort. We've invited some experts to tell you how tomorrow at 9.
So I'm opening up the book, and I'm trying to look.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Attorney General Eric Holder defends the seizure of journalists' phone records to safeguard national security, government power, freedom of the press, and national security.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
So I'm opening up the book, and I'm trying to look for something peaceful and happy to read. And instead, I come across this horrible-looking manifesto that talks about the superiority of the white race and how we need to annihilate everyone but them for their own safety. And I shut the book, and it finally hits me that I am in the home of an honest-to-God Klansman, and I am a black woman. And so I look down the hallway at this woman, and she's looking back at me like, don't you get this now? And I'm like, oh, shit. Okay? So, but now the mess is coming up again from this man's mouth and nose, and I'm like, oh, thank God, I got something to do. So I'm going, and I'm going to clean up this mess, and the stench is awful, and I'm looking at this man, and I'm like, I'm so glad he's not sentient, because this is horrible irony. I am helping to clean him up, and he's a white man. He probably hates me.
That's Stephanie Somerville telling a story on The Moth about something that happened to her in a small town in Indiana, where she, as a, I guess, nurse or a helper, was helping a white supremacist patient. An example of the kind of stories that you hear on The Moth here on Friday nights at 9. And tonight at 7:30 at Spirit Square, although it is sold out, I suppose there's always a chance that somebody won't show up and you'll be able to stand in the back. Dan Kennedy's with us. He's the host of The Moth and The Moth Story Slam series. Maggie Sino's a senior producer and director and a story coach with The Moth. And John Lincoln is a charlatan and a three-time storyteller on The Moth. He tells a story again tonight. Before the break, we were talking about how you get these stories ready, and after you work with the coach, you come in with your great story, your personal story, and the coach punches it up, tells you what to take out or helps you decide what to take out, what to stress, how to pace it so that it's 12 minutes long and that the audience doesn't lose its train of thought as you're telling the story. After you've done it so many times and rehearsed it in your head and made sure that it's always not going to come in at 13 minutes or 15 minutes, it's going to come in at 12 minutes. How do you keep it fresh? How do you keep it from not being a performance, an acting performance?
Well, there's two things. And one thing is that these stories aren't scripted. They are rehearsed. They're not scripted. And
but by the time you do it 10,000 times, it's a script in your head, isn't it?
Well, I mean, one of the things that we talk about a lot with people is making an outline, making sure that you know the major points of your story, the major action points. And that's something that definitely we go over. So, you know, if we've decided that the extra bit about your mother doesn't make sense in the story, that you don't add it back in, say. But it's really sort of about remembering the action of the story, but leaving some of the realizations open. John can speak to this.
Absolutely. And I think Dan was on point when we were talking earlier about writing it out and then trying to speak it. What I found is that the more detailed I am in what I write, the more locked into that I am. So I have to step back from that and loosen it up. And I've also found that as it ebbs and flows as we practice, because Maggie will say something to prompt me, or when we're practicing with the other storytellers, they'll have a completely different viewpoint on that. And then I can rework what that is, and what I back away from what I've written and just get in the moment.
How difficult is that? It sounds easy, but
hard.
I know, yes.
It is.
The one thing, too, that I think is really important to remember is that, you know, we're not really a forum for getting it right, as wrong as that sounds. Like, in the years that we've been doing this, you know, I've actually, as the years have passed, I've come to really sort of be a little bit weary when someone is a professional, someone is a writer or an actor or something like that, because The moment we're trying to capture is just that moment that we've all had forever, which is you're sitting around the table, you're hanging out, you're finished with dinner, you're finished with dessert, you're with people you love, and you remember something that happened to you this week, and oh my gosh, I have to tell you guys about this. That's the moment right there. And you know, aside from making sure that, you know, things don't go too terribly sideways, that's really all the moment is, and everyone's been doing it all their lives. And I know in New York that, you know, we'll do these shows where I'm thrilled when, you know, the person from the customer service line at Con Ed comes up on the stage and tries to remember their first line for a minute, because it just, it's this authentic moment. The crowd's always with you at the Moth.
Yeah.
And you know, I love it. Yesterday we heard a story where, you know, someone was kind of starting to cry during the story and apologizing. And it's like, that's pretty normal. You're at a weird part of this story that's beautiful and funny and touching. But, you know, the day that we're getting this right and smooth and pro is something's wrong.
You said the crowd's always with you. And I was going to ask a question about that. You go to a play and the audience goes into the theater and they want to like this. They want this to be good because they plunk down their good hard money for it. And sometimes when it's not, they're like, they lose interest or they leave an intermission and you know, they go home. At a comedy club, they want to laugh. And if you're not good, they tend to get abusive sometimes. This doesn't happen in these shows. Why not?
Well, because it's a conversation. Even though there's one person up on stage who's doing the talking, it's really a conversation between the storyteller on stage and the audience, the same way that I'm talking to you right now and I'm talking, but we're still having a conversation. We're engaging with each other. We're reading each other. We're calibrating our tone of voice and what we say to the room. And that's what we're open to. And that's, I think, a lot to Dan's point about what makes it great and why you never want to get too rehearsed, because you need to stay alive to that.
Why is it a conversation and not a monologue?
Well, I guess, you know, I mean, I guess the distinction for me between those two things is a monologue is a very sort of like structured, rehearsed, choreographed experience that is then presented to somebody to observe. And a conversation can very much change in the middle.
Oh, and I think my experience is the response of the audience will drive sort of the how I behave in the moment, how I engage in the moment. Mm-hmm. So I can elevate something or to pull back on something right at the time we're, you know, engaging in this.
You're very good at what you do, because I listened to a bunch of these stories yesterday to get ready for this, and I listened to several of yours, and I went to dinner with friends last night, and they said, what's on the show tomorrow? And I said, you don't listen to the promo? No, I said we're going to have people on from The Moth, because they're, oh, The Moth, they're in town, that's right, oh, gosh, The Moth, can you get me tickets? No, it's sold out. Well, they asked me, one person wasn't familiar, and they asked me what it was, and I talked about it's a show about storytelling, and I told one of your stories. Let me give you an example. I told one of your stories, and I must have hit all the plot points. And I could only do that because you told it really well, and they sat at the table either being polite or rapt. I prefer to think that they were rapt, not because I was great, it was because of your story.
Was there alcohol involved?
A single glass of wine and lots of Thai food. So anyway.
Which is the title of the news story, by the way.
But as I told it, and they said, wow, that's really a good story. And I said, yeah, isn't it? What is that? What is that that makes people go? And there was not a – you could not hear a pin drop at the table. What was up? Why is that? What's the power of that?
What's the power of that? Or what is that? I guess it's almost two separate questions. Now I'm sort of like looking around the table for what people, for what others think of this. You know, a really good story is, there's so many things that make a really good story, but you know, I think the big thing is that, the big thing is about this forum, and the big thing about people getting up and talking about, their own lives is it's something that they care really passionately about, and it's a moment that's meant a lot to them, and it's also a moment where something fundamental shifts for the storyteller. They're talking about a moment where something in their life really changed, whether it was their circumstances or their point of view. And you know, when people talk about those moments and sort of bring you know, bring the care and the passion to thinking that through and to trying to communicate that to somebody else, it's riveting. It's riveting. And then there's, you know, you can always sort of talk about technique, but it's not, it's much more the guts of it than the technique of it that makes it so effective.
And, you know, and the retelling of that stuff too is something that's just been happening since the dawn of time. I think that's just what we do as people. We hear something like that from another fellow human and we telegraph it to the others because there was something at stake. Mm-hmm. There's something we can identify with. I mean, this has been going on since, you know, some guy, I'm sure, in a cave at the caveman level, you know, sat around a fire, told a really amazingly eloquent yarn about a mammoth that almost got out of control. And then if it was a harrowing story or an interesting story that we can all relate to, you know, 2 weeks later, a different caveman is going, did you hear that situation with the mammoth the other night?
Yeah. I don't think Steve
was trying to hunt one down there, and it got crazy.
I don't think he used the word situation. I think mostly they had 10 monosyllabic words.
Ugh.
They would use the word. Yeah, situation. They would cross their legs. They would, you know, make tea and say, did you hear the situation with the woolly mammoth?
Right.
A little disconcerting.
And draw on the wall while the woman said, put the crayon down. Yeah. We have a clip of Dan Kennedy telling a story about his life not going so well that leads to a therapist named Milton.
I was telling him like something about a terrible week I had had, and I was like, you know, this isn't going great, my job sucks, blah, 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 blah. And he goes, how many beers did you have this week? And I'm like, well, I mean, I get what you're saying. It wasn't a total write-off. Like, I got to have some beers. You know, like, I get it. Don't be negative, you know. So I was like, well, yeah, it's true. I did get to have some beers. And then I was like, oh, wait a minute. Are you saying there's like a link between my drinking and things not going well for me? And he leans back and he goes, well, you're part Irish, your last name's Kennedy, and all your heroes are writers. So let's just keep an eye on it.
Milton.
It's a funny story. And it pays off in a very different way. You write funny material in many different venues, how do you explain how you see the world in a way that's not one-liner humor, but it's storytelling humor that really is engaging and funny, and we can all relate to it, even though we haven't seen Milton as a therapist ourselves?
You know, it's just, it's a really, really, really simple formula, which is just pain plus time plus terror plus debt plus failed relationships plus, you know, it's, you know, I think I see the world the same way I think all of us do. John and I were talking about this at lunch the other day. It's like, do you feel like life is kind of a cross between sheer terror and then like really petty high school stuff? And it's like, yeah, isn't that confounding? Yes, it is. Does that ever keep you up at night? Yeah, it sure does. You know, it's like, that's sort of the, you know, that's the lens package I was stuck with in the camera rental, you know, that they gave me when I came to Earth. That's kind of how I see
things. Can you find humor in most situations? Do you find that your life is funny or the world is funny, even in tragedy?
This is why The Moth has been so important to me. It's funny once I open my mouth. Once I open my mouth, it's funny and I feel better. And if I don't, it's a pretty sad, scary, dark place. I mean, not to get too, I don't want like any of the local authorities checking in on me at the hotel. Yeah, I don't
think this
is. Wait, I misunderstood the format of the show. Do you help me with the things I'm struggling with?
So what I'm hearing is
that's right.
A lot of people do come back and contribute to this multiple times. And I think you said, Maggie, that everybody has a story. And everybody may have a story. But I'm wondering how many people have multiple stories that are really interesting and that can be crafted even into a 12-minute piece, which in the course of a lifetime is short, but it's a long time to be on a stage by yourself.
Yeah, you know, I mean, everybody has a story, and I would venture to say that everybody has many stories, and what brings people back to us is a combination of just their interest and their passion for sharing what happened to them with other people. And then, you know, and some of it too is just like that, what we call the art of the raconteur, just somebody who can dive in and take the material of life and let us experience it with them.
Speaking of which, I remember hearing this on the air. Anthony Griffith, who is a comedian and who had appeared on The Tonight Show several times, and he was on The Moth. And I found his story to, because I was waiting for him to be a comedian, but it wasn't that at all. His story was compelling and touching, and here's a little piece of it now.
Charles Dickens' classic tale, Tale of Two Cities, starts off with the phrase, it was the best of times, and it was the worst of times. In 1990, I moved from Chicago with my family to L.A. to seek my fame and fortune, and in a couple of weeks of being there, I got two important phone calls. One was from the talent coordinator for The Tonight Show, offering me to have a spot as a comedian on The Tonight Show. And the second call was that my daughter's doctor had called up to say that her cancer had resurfaced. A year prior, she was diagnosed with cancer, and we fought it, and it went into remission, and now it's back.
So the whole story revolves around the dichotomy of having to do his job, be funny in front of people and not turn down The Tonight Show and earn money while his daughter is dying of cancer. A lot of people tell stories that are very, very personal, which makes it electric when they do. But how difficult is that for them?
Very difficult. I mean, these guys can, I think, speak to this even more than I can, but it's very hard for people. But also, time after time after time, storytellers have come up when they've gone through the process, and it's been very emotional for them and very exhausting for them. And, you know, I've even seen people before going on stage, like, actually shaking. Yeah. And then coming up to me afterwards and just being like, thank you so much. I didn't know how important it was to be able to get up there. Catharsis. And to be able to, yeah.
It is cathartic.
And to be able to speak the truth about what happened to them.
Because, go ahead, John.
Well, life is a series of stories. And I think the wonderful thing about this and the effort that goes into this is stepping back and looking at the story and how it fits into life. Mm-hmm. And there's some broader message because it's all our lives are all woven together by a series of stories. And so getting at that and sort of looking at that really honors that moment in time and the emotion that was there, the humor, the irony, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. But being able to draw that out and kind of look at it and then talk about right. that in a way that's engaging, that's what we do. The other thing that I think is interesting, so many people will say to me, I don't know how you have the nerve to tell stories. I can't tell stories, they say. And they've just told me a story.
That's right.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
We all do it. Yeah. We all do it. I think some people just spend a bit more time thinking about
it. What I thought was interesting about Anthony Griffith is here's a guy who's not afraid of being in front of an audience. He stood on the stage at The Tonight Show and in front of millions of people and told jokes. But when you're a stand-up comedian, you put this shield of armor on, I would think, to tell your jokes. You put this persona on, and here he is, very vulnerable during this story and emotional during this story. It's a very different kind of experience for the audience and for him. Why did he want to do it?
Well, I didn't work with him personally, so I can't, I can't speak to his exact experience, but I can speak to the experience of people who I have worked with. And a lot of it is just that, one, it's that need to tell the truth very badly, just to get up and say what is true for them. And going out of your comfort zone a lot of times is very exciting and also very healing.
Maggie Sino is a senior producer, director, and story coach for The Moth, which appears tonight at Spirit Square at the McGlowan Theater. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the law firm of Horak Talley, including family law attorneys experienced in handling separation and divorce, child support and custody, alimony, and property division. Horak Talley, attorneys who get things done. And Sedgefield Interior Landscape, specializing in interior plant design, installation, and continuous maintenance for businesses. Information available at sedgefieldinc.com. Attorney General Eric Holder defends the seizure of journalists' phone records to safeguard national security, government power, freedom of the press, and national security, the topic at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show. And if you'd like to join our conversation about storytelling, and specifically about The Moth, 704-926-WFAE, that's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, or online at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
Peter Sagal here from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. They can do amazing things with old cars these days. They can strip the metal, remove the plastics, process the whole thing, and turn it into All Things Considered. Or if the raw materials aren't high quality, it can still be turned into Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Seriously, it happens all the time. It's why your radio smells like old Corinthian leather when you listen to our show. Turn your old car into the programs you love.
Learn more at WFAE.org. And thanks.
Sometimes after school, I would sit on the porch in this glittered-up Burger King crown, pretending like I was a beauty queen sitting up in a convertible in a parade. And sometimes I would practice my beauty queen acceptance speech. Oh my gosh, thank you so much! You know, when I was just a little fat child, y'all made fun of me. But I forgive you, for in the words of Jesus Christ, to who I dedicate this crown, y'all knew not what y'all did. I just knew in my heart that one day my life would change. So you can imagine my excitement when I learned that Mrs. Gandhi's third grade spring production would be Peter Rabbit, the musical. I stood in shock and horror when it was announced that I had been cast in the pivotal role of the Green Bean.
That's storyteller Faye Lane back in 2008 in a Moth production at in New York City, telling one of her stories. You can hear all of the story clips that we're playing. You can hear all of the stories in their entirety on our website at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. It is Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. We're with Maggie Sino, senior producer and coach, story coach with The Moth. Dan Kennedy, host of The Moth Story Slam series and a storyteller himself. And John Lincoln, a Charlottean who has been on the program three times and is telling a story tonight at Spirit Square's McGlone Theater at 7:30, for which I am now told there are an extremely limited number of seats. By the time these words leave my mouth, they will be gone, and you have to call the Blumenthal Performing Arts location to get a ticket. How many people submit to tell stories over the course of a year? Because thousands have been told. How many submit?
Well, there's not really a submission process. We get storytellers in all kinds of different ways. We have a marvelous curatorial producer named Meg Bowles, whose job it is to keep track of all of the people who she has her work cut out for her, you know, who are possible and past storytellers. And they come from all over. We actually have a pitch hotline. If you go to themoth.org, you can click on Tell a Story. John, actually, this is how John came to us, was through the pitch hotline.
I did. I practiced this little clip to get it just right for probably 3 hours to get a one-minute pitch. I sent it off, and I thought, we'll see what happens, and nothing did. And then 2 years later, I got an email. and by the way, I was invited to the show. Got a follow up email that said The Moth in Durham, featuring Molly Ringwald.
Yes.
Needless to say, I thought it was a little bigger than I had originally thought.
Oh, and your story turned out to be her mother's favorite next to hers.
Yeah, her sister's. Yeah, her sister's. Yeah, absolutely.
So technically, how did you do? I mean, what's the technical process? Do you have to have a studio? Do you have to have a microphone? Do you just do it into your telephone and then?
Just do it into the voicemail.
Oh, into the voicemail.
Now, I will say I stepped back and, you know, wrote it and practiced it and practiced it for several hours to get 1 minute.
How do you explain the 2-year delay? Were they just desperate for somebody from North Carolina?
Well, maybe.
Well, I mean, the thing is, each of these shows happen. The way storytellers are selected for the show is very much, we have a theme. The theme for tonight is Into the Wild.
Yes.
So each show has a theme, and each show is curated around the theme, and we just try to get a lot of different points of view on this theme.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, one of the ways that we select the storytellers, and we're also always looking, make sure, you know, we've got men, we've got women, we've got a different selection of ages. So a lot of great stories cross our paths that sometimes it just takes a little while to find the exact right spot for them.
Right.
geography where they're located.
Exactly.
So in my case, it was Durham. Yeah. So, sure.
So you're not being put up in a 4-star hotel and flown in first class. You have to kind of be nearby.
Yeah. Well, or fly in steerage.
We also, I mean, it's important to us too. I mean, this is why John's here again tonight, but it's important to us because we do, you know, I'm here from New York City, Dan's here from New York City, but we very much, and each of these live events is a one night only event. What's happening tonight will never happen in this form ever, ever, ever again. And one of the things that's just super important to us is that it's very of the moment and of the place. Yeah. So making sure that we have at least like a couple of storytellers, Kim Brooks, who I know, you know, I think
she's an actress in town, but she works here at WFAE.
Yes. She's telling a story tonight, too. And it's just, you know, it's important to us that these shows are just very much, again, like I said, of the moment and of the place.
So Into the Wild is the theme tonight. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, you really have to come to the show to find out, don't you?
I can't get a ticket. What does that mean?
I think the one thing I can give like a little hint about what I'm going to talk about tonight on stage is that, and I want to do this because, you know, if any listeners out there are anything like me and terrified of your feelings and would rather just shove them down with food like I do when I'm alone, I want to assure you that not every moth story and at every show, we have a really nice balance emotionally. And, you know, we've talked about a lot of stories that are very, you know, heavy and moving and beautiful, but a lot of them are just funny too. I mean, it's not, you know, we're not like just telling real, you know, don't come prepared to be down and don't come prepared to necessarily cry. There's going to be a lot of laughs. I mean, tonight for me, Into the Wild just means that there was an editor of a men's magazine in New York City who made the terrible, terrible mistake of thinking it would be funny to send me into a jungle halfway around the world with a National Geographic crew to look for a world record python that was living in this cave in Indonesia. And you couldn't, I mean, to put it mildly, I'm functioning just great in Charlotte because it's a beautiful town. But generally speaking, when I get off of like my 4-block radius, I turn into Rain Man when I'm on tour, you know. So the idea of putting me in a cave with a giant snake because hilarity would ensue was, you know, it doesn't lead to a terribly deep and moving story, but it's a fun disaster for everyone to witness, maybe.
Now, I don't know what you're telling tonight, John, but there's a story that you have told in the past that could certainly qualify for Into the Wild, and I want to play a little clip about this. This is from an event that happened, I believe, in Austin, Texas. Yes. But the event that happened to you happened while you were in high school, and you were in the wilds of Tennessee. That's why this would qualify for tonight's show. Let's listen to a portion of that story, and then we'll talk about this.
Finally, he gets it open. He gets the money out, and I'm thinking, okay, we're just about done here. And he says, you know, I'm going to have to tie you up. And I think, well, that makes sense. It is a robbery. So I grab an extension cord, and I hand it to him. And I sit down and I put my hands behind my back because I'm trying to be helpful and move things along here. So he ties my wrists together and ties them to the chair. And when he finishes, he kind of looks around the office and he says, you got anything I could gag you with? And I say, well, would a towel work?
As I listened to that yesterday, I thought, this is the most bizarre thing I've ever heard. Really? Were you that calm in the face of that kind of danger?
These guys.
You're being robbed.
So the story is actually two robberies when I was 16. I know. Overnight desk clerk at the Wilderness Road Inn. But the first robbery was just such a clown event. I mean, these guys were so
nice
and polite. Sure, they tied me up and gagged me and stole my car. And, you know,
I wanted you to give them the chocolate mint that goes on the pillow, too.
Well, I was trying to be helpful. I was raised to be helpful. That was part of the thing. And so they appreciated that at the end.
And this is one of those stories that does get scary at the end because it does take a deep, dark turn. Will you think it's very funny now? Was it funny as it was happening, or have you been able to find the humor in it over time?
I would say, well, the first story was funny at the time. I was just amazed that this was happening. I kept expecting when the police came, I expected Barney Fife to drive up with Andy because it was just such a comedy of amazing stuff. But the second robbery was very traumatic, mm-hmm. and yeah. You know, it really influenced my outlook on a lot of things.
It's a terrific story, and as most of the stories I've ever heard on The Moth are, and it begs the question: what happens to these stories once they're told on The Moth? Is that their life cycle? When the light goes out, that's it. The moth goes away, and the story goes away, never to be told, never to be heard again by anybody except your closest friends. Because some of these stories are, I would think, fodder for anthologies.
Well, that's, I mean, where the radio hour and the podcast come in. You know, that's what we're really excited about. And somehow, from day one, everyone knew, like, we should be recording these. We should have an archive of this. And you know, that's the exciting thing about both of those places, mm-hmm. is these stories live on, which again gets back to this primal thing of that's what we want. Like, you know, when you go visit your family, it's like everyone tells the same stories. Like if we were all aware, we'd go, I know you've heard this 31 times. I'm going to go ahead and tell it again. But it's like people just want that archive of their lives, you know?
Yeah. We also have a book coming out this September, which will be available for pre-order pretty soon. So just a heads up to anybody listening.
Will it be a book on tape so we can actually hear these stories, or we have to go to the trouble of reading
that? It is going to be a book that is available for the trouble of reading it, yes. The audio version of it is still – the news on that is still coming, but –
You know, most of these people, correct me if I'm wrong, are not professionals.
Right.
They're not actors. They're not comedians. Yep. Occasionally you'll get them, but for the most part, they're ordinary people who are listening, who could be people on the stage telling a story in The Moth. That's a very scary experience for a lot of people to be up in front of. Public speaking is the world's most feared thing. And although this is different than making a speech, it's perhaps even scarier. Do you ever have people who freeze, who can't, they get up there and they just can't do it?
No, I've never seen it happen.
It's amazing. Yeah, you would know that, I think, from the get-go. And you know, the other thing that's a lot different about this than the sort of like, you know, boogeyman of public speaking is you're a little nervous before you do it, and it's amazing how good you and everybody feel after doing it. You know, it's really one of those things.
That's your story that I read. That the first time, maybe yes. I'm wrong, that the yes. first, you just...
I had stage fright, complete mm-hmm. stage fright. I lost the entire story. I was wandering around the bowels of the theater beforehand, shaking my arms out, and it was terrible. But when I got up on the stage and the lights hit me, they're very warm, and you can't really see the audience. But as soon as I said my first line, which you do memorize so that you have that as an anchor, I heard my voice and I felt a sense of calm.
Who wouldn't?
And it just...
Well, I'm just curious, what's your background, John, before you started being a storyteller on the board?
I'm a corporate kind of a guy for years, and then bought an Airstream trailer and packed up my dog and cat and drove around the country for a couple
years. But not a performer?
You don't... No, I mean, I've done conferences and spoken at conferences and things, and I was on the high school, you know, prose and poetry team and was a champion at that, but that was in high school. I've just always enjoyed talking and sharing, as people will testify.
We have a couple of Facebook comments and emails I'll share with you. Melina on Facebook writes, what can I do as a rookie to be better at storytelling?
Stay a rookie and keep your heart in it.
Stay a rookie.
Don't get too good at what you do. When it comes to being honest and vulnerable and just talking about what your experience has been so far. I mean, that's my two cents. Maggie may or may not have another point of view. We all have them, that's for sure.
Well, as a coach, you must have some tips on structure.
Sure, yeah. I mean, the one thing to always remember is that a story is about a moment where something changed for you. So the question that a question to just investigate as you're thinking about how to communicate it is, so maybe it was really funny that you bought an egg sandwich and you wanted the egg sandwich and then you dropped the egg sandwich and then another guy handed you his egg sandwich. Like, you know, that's a fun anecdote. But, you know, what's a...
Unless you marry
is there
the
something,
guy.
Unless right.
you marry the guy, that's not, you know.
Exactly, exactly. Like, what's at stake? What's the thing in it that makes it a little, that pops it a little bit beyond something that happens every day?
Well, and I think as you really consider the story, it could just be a soundbite kind of a story that yeah. you've told a few times. If you sort of, again, step back away from it and really consider it, it's part of life. And so there's a message there, and it's connected to other things. And I think the fun thing for me has been really getting at what that is. It yeah. puts things in perspective, and then I can share that, and then people connect, and that's what life is.
Angie on Facebook says, I've had more than one moth moment sitting in the car just crying along with the storyteller, or sitting in the driveway totally unable to get out of the car until the storyteller is done, which is what public radio is all about, we hope. Susan emails, partly because of the moth, I have come to see that the stories we tell about our lives help us make sense of what happens to us on Earth. When we tell our stories, we choose how we portray ourselves. Stories have an amazing power to heal, to teach, to connect us. I don't consider myself a storyteller, but I love to talk, and I have had amazing, gracious, and unpredictable events in my life. What a blessing to be able to tell stories for ourselves and others. Thanks for the moth.
What a great comment.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Exactly what I mean by stay a rookie is like just be exactly what she just said is so wonderful. It's like I don't consider myself a storyteller either. People have told me, oh, you're a storyteller. And I think I suppose they're my friends that I've been hanging around with forever. And we all like to talk to each other and meet other people who want to talk to each other too.
I know that you go around the country because you want to hear different stories from different kinds of people and get a different, maybe regional perspective. Do you find that the stories you hear from region to region are substantially different, or that the audiences react to the stories in a substantially different way than they would in Manhattan, for instance?
No. I mean, what's great about going region to region, and what's great about being able to have people who are from a place talk to the place that they're from, you know, is just that sometimes there's a shared perspective that can happen from city to city. But what we're really at is what's universal about these experiences, and what's sort of primal about just standing up there and having that communication. So what's fantastic is, one, you get sort of the fun of somebody being able to be like, you know, and I went to UNC, but you also get the larger connection of somebody just speaking their truth.
Maggie Sino, senior producer, director, and story coach for The Moth. Dan Kennedy is host of the Moth Story Slam series. He will be telling a story tonight at Spirit Square at 7:30 in McGlone Theater, along with John Lincoln, a charlatan, and a three, now four-time storyteller on The Moth. And the show's at 7:30, almost sold out. You have to call the Blumenthal and see if they can squeeze you in. Thank you for the hour.